Good morning, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Hawk Blogger Mornings. I am Brian Nemhauser. You can find me, this show, all that we do at Hawk Blogger, whether it's YouTube, TikTok, Instagram, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, all the places. Every Tuesday, we get to talk to one of the favorite Seahawks I've ever got to cheer for, Matt Hasselbeck, about what's going on with him, what's going on in the NFL, and what's going on with the Seahawks. Matt, how are you doing on this fine Tuesday?
I'm doing great, Brian. I just told you off air. I drove from Nashville, Tennessee to Boston last night. Pulled over once to do the Colin Cowherd show, rented a hotel room for like, I don't know, 35 minutes, set up my setup and did the thing. And, you know, and then just got back on the road. I was hoping to get to like Williamsport, Hershey, Pennsylvania. I ended up in somewhere in Maryland instead, but good time. Excited to be home. Huge snowstorm coming here. So just in time to shovel the driveway for the family.
Is that kind of your goal, is just to drive, move around the country to where you can shovel snow around a house?
It's the opposite of my goal, actually. It's the opposite. Whatever the opposite of shoveling snow is, that's my goal.
Well, man, you are you're a rolling stone. You definitely gather no moss. You're rarely in the same place the next time we talk, but did you get a chance, wherever you were, to watch this game last Thursday night?
Yeah, who didn't? It was awesome. Incredible game. I think if you're the Rams, you got to be sick to your stomach. You know, they probably feel like officiating kind of did them in a little bit. You know, a lot of focus probably on the two-point play. That to me wasn't. That was a great play by the Seahawks, even if accidental. Mm-hmm. But I thought the lineman downfield on the touchdown pass, the goal line, I thought that was a terrible call. And I'm not one to make excuses with referees, but I don't know. It's just like, wait, what are we doing? You literally just robbed us of points. That is literally just a football play. Like, what are we doing? So, you know, it was a huge game. Huge game. A lot of fun. A lot of people jumped off the Sam Darnold bandwagon during the game, tried to get right back on it by the end of the game. It was a good one.
Yeah. I mean, what's the Matt Hasselbeck viewing experience like? Are you just chilled out on a couch? Are you like devoid of emotion, just analyzing what you're seeing? Are you jumping up and down when what's that look like?
You know, if you ask, so when you get a concussion, they don't ask you how you're doing anymore. They ask you, the people around you, for like, cause they want like the truth, you know? So like, I could give you an answer, but I think if you would ask like my family who would watch a game with me, they'd give you all the real answers. Like, I'm always like, whoever the announcer is, I'm kind of like, that's not true. It doesn't even make sense. That's not accurate. You know, like there's that. Then there's, I'm definitely invested. I'm definitely, I think kind of like a quarterback coach, probably, you know, like use Sam as an example. Sam, I'm on your side, but like you got fooled twice and like, you can't do that. You know, come on, man. You know, like, so I'm not against you. I'm with you, but you know, like let's learn, you know, like that kind of stuff. So I'm invested. You know, one of the people in my household, I don't want to name names, but my oldest daughter, she's really invested. Like, she's screaming. She's like angry, happy, jumping, fetal position, like all this stuff. So like, you know, she's so into it that the rest of us are like, okay, relax. Like, you know, like, you know, it's all, you know, win or lose, you're good, you know? So I think maybe I'm like a little bit more calm for that reason, but I don't know how you can't watch that game and be like on the edge of your seat, excited, like, yeah, it's our night. And then like, what are we doing? You know? So pretty good game.
I actually going to pull up the film of the first Sam Darnold interception in a second, because I have a couple of questions for you and I want to get your read on that. But before we get to that, what was your take on Sam Darnold's overall game and the way it kind of finished?
Well, that's the whole thing. He had the opportunity to finish. And so I think a great thing you can learn about a quarterback is how he bounces back from adversity, you know? And like when I was studying kids, you know, like I guess coming out of the draft, when that was part of my role at ESPN, one of the things that I would do is I would look at the play after their most negative play. You know, I'd look at all their interceptions, but then I'd look at the play after their interception. And like, what did I learn from that? And, you know, I sometimes nothing. But I just think that this was in a game where Sam had, what I would say, two real critical errors. both on third down, and yet it was like it never happened. He was able to press the clear button, and I think that's a great thing for all quarterbacks, whether you had a great first half or not a great first half, or a great third quarter or not a great third quarter. It doesn't matter. The next play is all that matters. The game is a whole bunch of right nows. You know, like, what's the play that's right now? Doesn't matter what happened in the past. And so I think that, you know, him coming back in the fashion that he did with everything on the line, it's clutch. You know, it's clutch. And I think that's probably the best thing that you could say.
I just, as a human, I mean, it's one thing to say, go to the next play. You know, you make a mistake in your profession, whether it's sports or anything else. And, you know, you have to deal with the mistake you made. That's tough. But to know that there's this narrative out there that everyone's just kind of made you the butt of a lot of jokes, and that, you know that that's going on, even if you're strong minded, to have that first interception happen and then the second interception happen, I don't know how you like the mental fortitude to be able to just kind of flush that feels pretty unnatural, even for a professional athlete.
Well, there's stuff that leans into that, though. Your teammates believing in you, your coaches believing in you, you know, your contract too. Like, it's not about, like, the contract thing's not about the money. It's about the fact that, you know, you don't have to look over your shoulder, that they're not going to like yank it and, you know, like yank you. And, you know, having Drew Lock as the backup is like, you know, I think a kind of a perfect situation in terms of he's not like, the cameras aren't, you know, turning to Drew Lock on the sidelines, like, oh, is he warming up? Like that kind of thing. Oh, this guy was just drafted to be here and replace you. Like there's that too. It's like, no, you were the reason we had a mistake, but you are the solution. The solution isn't just like, let's see what the next guy can do. Let's see if Shedeur Sanders is the option. Like, it's not that. Like it's not some name, some like, you know, just like publicity, you know, circus kind of like, it's no, you're the guy. And like, you know, Ernest Jones, that's why I think it was such a big deal when Ernest Jones, whatever the motivations were, when he got up at the podium and had Sam's back after his first tough game, and Mike McDonald being clear, you know, from the get-go, even in training camp when they were talking about Jalen Milroe. Oh, is Jalen, you know, do you think Jalen Milroe and the way Mike McDonald in his own way had Sam's back? Like, that's, I forget what he said. Ridiculous question. You know, I understand you got to ask it, but that's ridiculous. You know, like that gives you confidence on that fourth quarter drive down when you got to get the touchdown, then you got to get the 2-point conversion. Like, no, I sink or swim. I'm the guy. Like, there's no lifeboat coming. There's no life raft. I need to swim, you know, and that's what he did. He swam. And that's why they got the victory.
What were you thinking after that second interception?
Well, you know, I actually was encouraged a little bit by some of what I saw, because in the first game, he was just trying so hard and he was rushed and the pass protection wasn't great. And like, he was just getting the ball out too quick and just like, you know, this is where the ball's supposed to go. Here you go. You know, and like, he fixed that in the second game. In this game, he just got fooled. He just got a little bit, I want to say like took things for granted, you know, like on the first, you know, maybe you're going to pull the tape up or whatever.
I'll put it up.
But he just got fooled. Basically, the moral of the story is he got fooled, you know? And like, if you get fooled, it's different. So it's like my thing in quarterback rooms, if I'm coaching quarterbacks, I would say to you, hey, I don't mind mistakes. Okay. Mistakes are going to happen. I hate repeat mistakes. Don't make the same mistakes, make new mistakes. And so here we go. They're going to run a play that's called Lion up top. They're going to disguise it.
I won't be able to play this. I'm just going to do like stop motion here. Cool. And so I want to hear your call or your description. So Cooper Kupp's going in motion, right? And
yeah, they're just,
he's got his defender going with him.
Yeah. So
the first question there, Matt, and I know you got a bunch to say. I want to hear all that. Is it true that when a player moves along after, like, the defender follows you in motion, that's man defense all the time?
No, not anymore. You know, like in the 80s and 90s, but not even in 01. Like, I remember in 01, I'm playing at Oakland against the Raiders, and Charles Woodson, you know, we go in motion and he runs over in motion and like, oh, that's man. Well, no, he blitzed and sacked me. But every single guy on TV for the last 20 years, like, oh, he goes in motion, it's man. Like, Not always. Usually. Yeah. Almost always. But what's that get me? Like, I don't like almost always. I mean, Mike McCarthy, when he was our quarterback coach in Green Bay, he did these like charts, unbelievable charts, analytics. He was doing analytics before anybody. And Brett Favre would be there. He'd be like, all right, so like 42% of the time they're going to do this. And Brett Favre would go, so like that's what's 42% get me? Like, what's that get me? And like, oh, anything over 35% is a huge percentage, you know, for two linebackers blitzing. And Brett would just go, so what? So, you know, and so that's how I think of it a little bit. Like, well, so here's what I do. Here's what I do. Every play, I expect man, I react to zone. Problem solved. So I don't care. You want to get a man zone indicator. Now, where it is important is when you call a man play or a zone play in the huddle, and then we get in the perfect play. That's super important in the red zone and stuff like that, third down. But no, it's not 100%er. It's a high
percent. Is what you're saying then here, you're not like the motion maybe helps as an indicator, maybe gives you something, but at pre-snap, you wouldn't expect – like you wouldn't say, okay, I know that they're in man right now.
Well, no, I would because here's a little trick. So go, there's three guys covering three receivers, correct? So when two of the three are pressed, it's probably man. So this looks exactly like man with two exceptions. Okay. Cause like the guy up top's pressed, the guy at the bottom's pressed, and then the guy in the Cooper Cup is pressed. However, I would say they're not pressed. Like, you know, people say they're pressed. That means like you're inside of 5 yards and I got you, man. But look at the head and look at the eyes of the outside receivers. They are peeking in. If I have you, man, I'm staring at you. I'm like, you're the point guard. I'm D'ing you up. Isolation play. I'm looking at you and nothing else. But if I'm looking over there, even though my body is pressed, my eyes are inside, like I you can't trust corners, you know? And so like, to me, I would think, you know, I don't know. But even with that, you don't always know as a quarterback, is it man or zone? And that's why it's just really important to play the play out. And in this case, like Lion, double slants, it doesn't matter to me if it's man or zone. I'm going to go inside out on my read regardless. And so that's from the quarterback's perspective. There's some things from the wide receiver perspective that I don't like about this play also. If I could just talk on it real quick.
Yes, please.
So on this play, typically what you would love is you would love Cooper Kupp, the inside guy, on the line of scrimmage and the outside receiver off the line of scrimmage. If Mike Holmgren was here, that's what he would want. If Bill Walsh was here, that's what he would want. But I get it. We're disguising the play. And so we're going to go to a three receiver side. We both have to be off the ball because the tight end's on our same side and he's on the ball. So that makes it a little tougher. However, Cooper Kupp, in the pure way to do this play, he's got to go quick. He's got to go quick because he's the inside of the inside out read. You're looking at him first and Rashid Shaheed second. So Coop's got to be quick and Shaheed's got to be slow. So like Shaheed, you got time on this route to really sell like you're going outside and then come in and you're inside. Coop, you got to go quicker if you can to just keep that window open. Kind of like a xylophone. It opens and it shuts real quick.
So can I pause you for 1 second?
Yeah,
because to that point, this is a freeze frame. The ball's been snapped. You could see Rashid Shaheed and JSN are already like starting their routes. Cooper Kupp has not moved yet.
Yeah. Right? And when you're Coop, like he's been the guy. Like when Jerry Rice came to Seattle, it was a little bit of an adjustment too, because everywhere he had been the guy. All the routes were kind of designed to do their thing. And then he had the freedom and the creativity to be an artist within it. And that's what Coop's experience has been most of his whole career. And so like now he really is just like sort of taking one for the team to open up that outside slant. And on top of that, this is a great disguise and a great bluff simulated pressure bluff by the Rams. So it's really not there. It's a great defensive play call. But that's where like there's multiple things that are just a little bit off. And Sam he's probably going inside out, tight end, Coop, you know, Shaheed. And it's really, really unfortunate. But like there's little tweaks here that lead to the, you know, what everyone in home's probably saying, like, oh, Sam, how come you didn't see that guy? It's like, well, the timing and the rhythm was just not like, see how small that window is right there for Shahid, how close he and Coop are together. And it allows
that's one of the things I was wondering is like the spacing off in this play.
Well, because in my opinion, Coop, if I had a perfect world, Coop would be on the ball and he would go right away. Like maybe even just one step and go, like understanding. And I'm going to stare at you. Like in your playbook, you're going to draw Cooper Kupp, number one read, knowing that I'm not throwing it to you. Shahid, number two read, knowing that I am throwing to you. So I'm this is kind of like I call it an almost no look. I'm looking, my feet are setting for Shahid. I'm looking at Cooper Kupp. And then at the last second, I'm going to Shahid because I'm confirming that nickel guy goes with Coop. So, you know, easier said than done, but this is a bread and butter day one kind of play. And it's those little details that do contribute to the play. You know, Shahid's got to be slower. Take your time. Let that window expand. And for Coop, similar thing. Now maybe he thought it was man. Maybe he got fooled too. Mistakes happen. That's why I just think it's important. Instead of like freaking out about the mistake, just learn from the mistake and then just don't ever make this mistake again.
Interesting. So what the implication is here is, like you talked about that Cooper Kupp would be faster or at least quicker to run his route.
Mm-hmm. And get your head around and get your head around, because that's when you're getting the ball. Like if this is a three-step drop timing, that means from shotgun, it's one step. You always subtract two when you're in shotgun. So this is a one step. So I have to catch and throw it to the inside receiver right away. Like that train is leaving. You either hit it now, you can't go back to it late, hit it right away, or you got to go to the outside. I remember we ran this play against Minnesota at home. I forget the year, maybe 06, I could be wrong, but Daryl Jackson was the inside guy and got him for a really, really long touchdown pass. I had zero intention of throwing it to him. I was just looking at him, confirming that the guy went with him, and we were playing the Minnesota Vikings, and you know that they ran the same offense as us, and they knew exactly what we were doing. And the guy tried to do this. I had no intention of throwing it to the inside guy, but he did it. But because your feet were on time, because the guy did what he was supposed to do inside, I think it was Daryl, you get to hit him and he goes. But you're not thinking it. Like you're 100% thinking that this ball is going to Shahid the whole time, but you just got to confirm what you know should happen.
So what you're saying is this was made to look like man. It was zone. So this Josh Wallace, the Rams defender, was not bailing off of his man responsibility. He was playing his zone as the defense called for.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's a great bluff. It's a great bluff. But
what the heck do you do as a quarterback?
You get synced up. So if Cooper was like engaged with him and looking, then that guy's not running out to Shahid. And if my eyes are looking at Coop and then all of a sudden I go out to Shahid, really like almost no look. It's not a no look. I'm just looking at number one, quote unquote, and then right out to number two, my feet, I'm not late. It's literally a one step drop. On high school footballs, most people play with this Wilson GST. And, you know, the way I coach my guys in high school is like a one-step drop is grab, step, throw, boom. Just, there's no waiting. You cannot hitch. You cannot be late. So that ball's got to come out. But your eyes have to go inside out, one, two. You can't just go right to two or stuff like this happens. So great disguise, but I think there's offensively some things to clean up that can help the quarterback have a bigger window, more room for error. This is another example, though, too, of I think with the Rams on third down, putting us in a box a little bit of what we love to do. You know, and so I just think there's an opportunity if you play this team a third time to take advantage of what you know that they think they know. If that makes sense.
Well, yeah. And you talked about the first game, the Rams were sitting on a lot of routes and sitting at the sticks. And
in this game too.
That's what seemed like to be happening again. Why haven't we seen any sort of pump and go double move kind of stuff? The closest thing I saw was AJ Barner's touchdown, which was a double move, or at least against the tendency there and did fool Cam Kitchens, the safety. So
I think the Seahawks do a good job of that. They do a good job of taking shots, double moves and all that stuff. But they're in certain situations, like, you know, you cross the 50, it's first and 10, you know, like I just don't know what the tendencies are. Again, this is what the Rams think the tendency is. I think it's a third down thing. Like when they study third and 7 to 10, are they saying, hey, these guys are going to run, like, or third and 3 to 6, are these guys going to go 17? Like, what's the goal of the play? You know? And so like, whatever the end, however they have sliced and diced their analytics in LA, I think they have a beat on us that way. And how you know is you see DBs breaking before wide receivers are breaking. You know, they recognize the formation and then they say, because there's no reason someone should ever squat on our two outside receivers. They are way too good, way too fast. Unless their coach is telling them, hey, hair trigger, they say, hair trigger, fire your gun. Like you're ready to go. And then you see this, and this, boom, we're gone. And that's kind of how, you know, that's why film study is so important. You hear people talk about it all the time.
Isn't that just like exactly where you want to have the defense, to where they think they like, isn't tendency breaking like the golden rule of the last half of the season for an offense?
I think what comes before all of this stuff, all the fun, cute routes and all this, is pass protection. And that's why DB, that's why you spend so much money on your front four. Like, that's why if your front four is playing well, your defense is playing well. I don't care who else you have. Like, if you have a pass rush with four guys, it allows you to do this. Offenses, they don't want to take double moves. They don't want to. They're like, we're not going to hold the ball. You know, like, they're playing off coverage. Let's just do this because we don't want to have negative plays. We don't want their line stunts, their games, all that kind of stuff. And then that's why bluff blitzes come into play, too. It's not nothing that was a look like a blitz pre-snap. So now everyone thinks, like, oh, ball's got to come out quick. And then it didn't have to come out quick, but that's sort of like, I don't know, it's a foundational piece. Pass protection first, and then whatever you want to do route-wise second.
Interesting. Well, so if you kind of take the full season now for Sam Darnold into account, the ups and the downs and the goods and the bads, do you see him making different mistakes that are encouraging? Do you see, like, well, they're different mistakes and he's still making too many of them, so it's not encouraging? How do you kind of view his arc?
No, I've been impressed. I've been really impressed. You know, and I'm talking, when I talk about Sam or quarterbacks, I'm talking the way that we would talk in the quarterback room with the door shut. You know, like, I know that your receiver that we just traded for cut his route two revolution short and the ball was behind. Like, I know that, but I'm coaching you. Like, if I was coaching him, I would say, hey, get your depth, catch the ball. But if I'm coaching you, I'm going to say, you know, put it on the eight, not the one, you know, or like whatever the coaching point might be. So, like, I'm coming at it that way. But I know I have been impressed. And I know these things aren't necessarily easy. But, like, the job's not easy. It's not supposed to be easy. Like, we're trying to hoist the Lombardi. We're trying to be the best in the world at something. And that's what this is. So, no, I think, like, there's a lot of good. You know, I think I've been critical in some games where he didn't use his legs. He didn't run. And then I felt like it was a point of emphasis. Like, no, I'm going to use my legs. I'm going to make them stop me with that. I think, like I mentioned, making sort of a correction from being too hurried in the first Rams matchup to in this game, literally the two interceptions were just, I got fooled. You know, I got fooled, but one was the one we just watched. The other was a fire zone with a D lineman. It happens. That's why it's, again, like, you trust what you see, but you need to verify. You know, and so I just think it's like it's a process of it's a lot of new teammates. It's a new coach. It's a new everything. And just keep improving and win games as you're developing. And I think he's doing a great job of that.
And what about Clint Kubiak as a play caller? I don't think I've asked you enough about where you think he is. It's really his first time where he might have a chance to be at the same team 2 years in a row.
Well, I think he's really good. I think he's exactly what Mike McDonald was looking for, a guy that has something he absolutely believes in. I don't really care what you're doing defensively. This is who we are. This is what we're about. And, you know, that, I think that's what Mike wanted. I think that's what he respects about, you know, Gary Kubiak and Mike Shanahan. You know, that's where it's coming from. But I do think that just like a quarterback, you're learning as you go. And I think he's learning his team. I think he's learning his head coach. And, you know, I think situational. I think if I had to be critical of where I think he could still improve, I think there's things that happened to this team before he got here that he's not aware of, you know, and I think just even back to being backed up and Ryan Grubb, and I think Ryan Grubb's a good coach, but it was just like a miss on the philosophy that Mike McDonald's looking for. What he, when they're backed up, he like at, under no circumstances are we turning the ball over, under no circumstances. And when I see Clint's play calling back there, he's just kind of doing what Kyle Shanahan would do, you know? And I'm like, I don't think you're really, really on the same page with the philosophy of the whole team, given what happened last year. You know, last year we were way too loosey-goosey with the ball, like backed up inside the 15-yard line. Like there, and I make the – it's not even a joke. I'm serious. Sometimes it would be better to take a knee three times and punt than what teams in the NFL do. And I do this thing every week. I watch the interception reel for the whole league. And I just, like, watch everybody's interception for the week and the whole league. And they're, like, they're common denominators, like, every week. And there's some, you know, star of the show once again this week. And then there's some guys that are never on the reel or rarely on the reel. But one of the things is these offensive coordinators, they don't respect the job that the defense has to do or special teams has to do when they're backed up. They just think like, well, you know, I'm probably going to get booed if I run it three times here and punt. And I'm not saying that's what you got to do, but you do need to be smarter with how you protect the football. And I think just like given the 2 year history of what we've been here, I don't know. That's maybe I'm nitpicking, but it's something.
Yeah. So now the Seahawks, Matt, are 12-3. They're still in control of their own destiny for the number one seed. And a fan would say, oh man, they just had this huge game. They've got kind of the mountaintop, and now they're going to go face a team that's clearly not as good as the team that they just played in Carolina, but it's in Carolina. Is this a recipe for a step back? And I'm curious for you as a player, is that something that enters into the conversation, or is it just, you know, back to our process every week we're 1-0? How does that go in a locker room?
I'll just tell you, as a player, that Thursday night game, like, people, it's the best. Because you get this mini bye, you know, you're off Friday, Saturday, Sunday, you get to watch and kind of learn from everybody else Monday. Like, it is the best. Like, I can't even, it's so nice. And I know there's, you know, people complain about it's a short week, but you're not in pads that whole week, you know? So like and usually guys suck it up to play on a Sunday. If you have an injury from like in a Sunday game and you have a Thursday game, you're just out. Like you're not getting shot up for those games. Like you're just, so even the guys that, I don't know, there's something good about that. So I don't think that's a big deal. I think they can taste it. And they had this little mini bye. And I know like they're probably just talking one game at a time, as they should. But I know when the coaches aren't around, the players are talking to each other in the sauna, the steam room, the shower, the locker room. This is where the deep conversations go on the training room, getting, you know, rehab or whatever. This is where these conversations happen. You say to each other, you'd be like, hey, man, that bye was awesome. I would love another bye. Well, how do you get another bye? You get the one seed. How do you get the one seed? We go take care of business at Carolina. And then we know we got another monster game after that. And we owe those guys one. So two games on the road and two tough teams. But like it's clearly defined. We don't have to worry about other people taking care of business or whatever. We can do it. And I know they all watched the San Fran game last night, so they know how legit that team is, you know, as they're coming back. So I don't think it's a, you know, it'll be a tough opponent, but it's not going to be one of these things where they're not all in on it. I can't see that happening.
Well, last thing, Matt, before I let you go, before you probably drive back to Boston for some reason to shovel some more snow. They do have these two games. They do have the number one seed right now. What do you, if you were looking at the Seahawks and you could focus on one thing for them to actually pull this off and get where they want to go, what are the one or two things that you'd be emphasizing for this team?
I would like them to be able to run the ball whenever they want to run the ball, like whenever they want to run it. Like, you know, we're going to run it. Everyone knows we're going to run it, and we're still going to run it, you know, and like, that's something that teams at this time of the year, you're going to need, you're just going to need to be able to do it. Things you can hang your hat on. Like, I don't care if it's a tendency, like, yeah, you know, it's coming. Like, I get a kick out of sometimes when people are like, oh, they called out our play. It takes me back to a flashback where Mike Holmgren would like get mad at us at practice because we'd be running a go-to bread and butter play against our scout team, and our scout coaches would tell them, hey, this is the play they're running. Here's what we want you to do. They would tell their guy, our guys on scout the play. And so we'd run it in practice and the play wouldn't work. And someone would say, stupidly, they would say, well, he knew the play was coming. And it was like, would you say that? Mike Holmgren goes nuts. It's like when your kids say, oh, I'm bored. It's like, oh, you're bored? Oh, I got some weeds you can go pick. Like, you're bored? I got some firewood you can go chop. Like, you're bored? Like, when you would say they knew the play, and then Mike would stop practice and he'd be like, here's what I want you to do. I want you to tell them, we're running the ball right here. This is what we're doing right here. Right? Like, you tell them the play's coming. And like, you know, it's sort of the mindset. And like, if you can get to where you are as an offense, where you have a couple of plays, kind of like Philly had last year with the tush push, you know it's coming. Go ahead and stop it. And you're going to whine and complain and try to change the rules and blah, blah, blah. Like, that's when we got you. That's when we can go beat anybody anywhere. And that's what I don't know if they have that right now. Now, they've got some good plays, but instead of being kind of good at a lot of plays, I think we just need to be really, really amazing at a handful of plays, running plays, because you can get all the play action you want out, off of it once it really works. That, to me, is where, like, where we can just – anybody, I don't care who you are, we can beat you. That's what I'd like to see.
Amazing stuff. Matt, who's been with us all season, benefiting Team Impact, we made our donation to Team Impact yesterday. Matt, let people know again what great work they do there.
Yeah, thank you for doing that too. It's excited to partner with you with that. You know, teamimpact.org, it's a great organization. It teams kids with disease or disability with NCAA athletes and teams. You get drafted, signed to those teams to your commitment, and you are a legitimate teammate, you and your family. Practices, games, the wins, the losses. And I think one of the great things that Team Impact does is it gives kids and families in this situation something that medicine could never give. And it's a two-way street. It's great for the kids and the families. It's also great for these NCAA athletes. And there's some amazing stories of being told about the impact that both have had on each other. So thank you for supporting them. I know there's a lot of great organizations out there, some who do really obvious work. And then, you know, others, I think, like Team Impact, that it's hard to even measure the impact truly that this will have for years and years to come on so many kids.
Matt, great stuff as always. Hopefully you get some rest and maybe avoid a shovel if you can for a little bit.
I have a snowblower, but
that's what kids are for.
Yeah. We'll leave it at that.
All right, Matt Hasselbeck, Ring of Honor member. Thanks again. So great stuff, Matt. Amazing. And I learned as I always do with Matt on there. Yesterday, I was going through that same play, the first interception for Sam Darnold. I was wrong. Like, I thought, like, someone else that had analyzed that play had said that Josh Wallace of the Rams came off his responsibility and you know, made a decision. I heard from somewhere else yesterday that it actually was not that. It was a zone defense that was disguised. And so to get that confirmation from Matt, cool. Also cool, like, he said that, you know, a lot of times if the guy moves with you in motion, that it's going to be man defense, especially when they're pressed up on you, but not always. He's right. I mean, we hear from the TV broadcasters all the time that it's about, oh, that near emotion, that they're in man. You'd think with all the quarterbacks that do color commentating, we would have heard what Matt said before. But that's a pretty sophisticated disguise to move in motion, because if you can manipulate that zone defense, I don't even know. There probably are rules of if there's wide receivers bunched in certain places, it probably changes the coverage call. You know, there's a lot of sophistication to what's going on. It is not easy. It is not easy to be a quarterback and make that read. And it was also interesting to hear from him how much attention he put on how the receivers ran that play versus what Sam Darnold did on that play. I had talked about the spacing yesterday. He similarly was talking about the spacing, but more about how they would have gotten better spacing was Cooper Kupp making his cut, his break a little sooner and getting off the ball a little faster. It was interesting to see there that Cooper Kupp was definitely slower off the ball. And I think that contributed also to tightening that window. So I don't know. For me, I think learning those little tidbits is important, not just because it's nice to kind of know how this all plays out, but it also, I think, gives you different questions and different answers about responsibility, about how the team addresses those issues. Like for me, my first thought after all of that was not, oh man, Sam Darnold really has got to fix this. I think there's still stuff for Sam to do for sure. But it's more about Clint Kubiak and tendency breaking. Like if they've gotten to the point where it's so obvious to the Rams that they know what the Seahawks are going to do in certain down and distances, the Seahawks need to self-scout. Like that's what a mini bye week can be used for, self-scout and break those tendencies. And it's not like Clint Kubiak's not doing any of that. The touchdown to AJ Barner was a tendency breaking play. I think the play to Ken Walker, the opening screen pass, was a tendency breaking play. So he got them as well. It wasn't just one way where Chris Shula got Clint Kubiak. Clint Kubiak did get Chris Shula a few times and ultimately enough times to win the game. But the fact that there are still those little aspects have to factor into what Clint Kubiak's studying when he gets into, looking at self-scout this past week and going into the rest of the season. All right, there's more to come. Before we get there, it's, you know, go to Carolina, watch this game. Go to San Francisco. Let's invade that stadium for the last game of the season. And a great way to do that is to get a great deal on tickets. And here's one way to do that. Good stuff. HawkBlogger10 is the code. And you can just click the link in the description of the video. It'll automatically add that code to your account in the app, and you can get tickets for whatever you want, including Seahawks games or other. I've heard from a bunch of you already taking advantage of it, so keep doing that and enjoy. Also, we're in the final stretch here, only today and tomorrow until December 24th. Can you use code HawkBlogger15 over at Simply Seattle? You get 15% off whatever you buy. Awesome, awesome gear for the Seahawks, Mariners, Kraken, Sonics, whatever it is you love. And 5% of whatever you buy will be donated by Simply Seattle to the Fred Hutch Cancer Center's Patient and Family Assistance Fund. And the Patient and Family Assistance Fund helps with transportation. It helps with lodging that for patients that are fighting for their lives with cancer. So great way to get something for yourself, get something for your loved ones, and help others. If you get a Simply Good hoodie for $25, $5 of that will go to the same Fred Hutch Cancer Center's Patient and Family Assistance Fund. So great way. Use code HawkBlogger15 on that and download the Sleeper app. If you haven't done that, you can get $20 without even making a deposit. Plus, if you use promo code Hawks, you'll get up to $100 match on your first deposit. Terms and conditions apply. See Sleeper's terms of use for details. Currently operational over 25 states. Check out Sleeper today. All right, we've got Pro Bowl news to talk about. We've got Seahawks news to talk about. All sorts of stuff. So let's close on that. First things first, Pro Bowl. I know this matters for different people for different reasons. It is a super flawed process where I think there's a third, fan vote, a third player vote, and a third coaches, I believe is how it works. And so you've seen the player, the fan vote results coming out the last few weeks. for the different positions. And then you'll see players that were number one in fan voting that don't even make the Pro Bowl. That's because players and coaches, I think, you know, see things differently than fans. And I'm glad for the most part. But without further ado, the Seahawks end up with six Pro Bowlers. And I'm doing a quick double check, but I believe that is tied for the most Pro Bowlers in the NFL. And I'll tell you the other teams that have six. The Ravens have six, although one of them is a punter, but still, they have six. The Broncos have six. The 49ers have six, and the Seahawks have six. Now, the 49ers six, by the way, includes a long snapper and a special teamer. So, and also a fullback. and so it's always a little like little questionable, but the Seahawks six are mostly legit, other than you could say kick return for Rashid Shaheed is a special teams one, but still. So the Seahawks six are Sam Darnold, DeMarcus Lawrence, Rashid Shaheed as a kick returner, Jackson Smith and Jigba, Leonard Williams, and Devin Witherspoon. So nice to see that the Seahawks got six players to the Pro Bowl. I think it's really nice that Leonard Williams got it. The guy absolutely deserves it. We'll talk about snubs in a second, but I'm glad he's not on the snub list. I'm glad for Sam Darnold. I think that's pretty cool. I wasn't necessarily expecting that, but that's great. Really cool for DeMarcus Lawrence. Worth noting that the last time DeMarcus Lawrence made the Pro Bowl was in 2023. That was also the last year that Adam Dirty was the defensive line coach in Dallas. So those two reuniting in Seattle has led to another Pro Bowl for DeMarcus Lawrence, and he's been great this year. So I think that's unbelievable that they signed him as a free agent when there wasn't, I think, a ton of interest around DeMarcus Lawrence. There was a lot of people kind of questioning whether that was a move that was going to be that useful. And the guy makes a Pro Bowl. And I don't think this is not just a name recognition, he's always in kind of thing. I don't think anybody expected him to be a Pro Bowler going into this year at his age, coming off the injury he had last year. So he's earned it. He has earned it. He has been a Pro Bowl level player. I think that's huge to add a Pro Bowl level edge player in free agency. Another really, really great move by John Schneider. Obviously, JSN's a no-brainer. Rashid Shaheed making it was cool. Like, he certainly has, you know, in a short amount of time, had a massive impact. The fact that he basically made the Pro Bowl as a returner when he's been with the team for what, like five or six games? I mean, that's just goes to show you how good he is as a returner, and season's not over yet. And then Devin Witherspoon. This one, I think, is one of the more interesting ones. There's no doubt to me Devin Witherspoon deserves to be a Pro Bowler this year. I thought his season last year was a little bit more questionable in terms of making the Pro Bowl, but he is there, and teams see the kind of value he has. Well, this is a guy that has now made the Pro Bowl in each of his first three seasons with the Seahawks and in the NFL. And that's the first Seahawk to do that since Russell Wilson from 2012 to 2014. And beyond that, he is one of only five cornerbacks in the Super Bowl era to make the Pro Bowl in their first three seasons. The other five that have done it: Patrick Peterson, Charles Woodson, Ronnie Lott, who people know as a safety, but came into the league as a corner, Everson Walls, and Mike Haynes. Those are all Hall of Famers. Patrick Peterson isn't in the Hall yet, I don't think, but I think he will be, or at least he'll be close to it. If you don't know who Everson Walls is, was one of the great corners, Cowboys back in the 80s. And then Mike Haynes is Hall of Fame level corner, made most famous, I think, in his time with the Raiders. But yeah, so I mean, you're talking about a pretty historic start to the career for Devin Witherspoon, who, you know, people had some questions about drafting him at the fifth overall spot, passing on Jalen Carter. I don't know that you can really question that move at this point when you've got a guy that has been a Pro Bowl player the first 3 years. Now, some people say, well, Pro Bowl is not validation. And that's a fine argument, I guess. It is a flawed system, but it does still have meaning, and it wouldn't be part of contract negotiations and incentive clauses if it didn't have at least some validity in terms of assessing a player's talent and contribution. So big stuff there for Devin Witherspoon. Now, as far as snubs go, I think that to me, the one that is the most criminal is Byron Murphy. Byron Murphy has been one of the best defensive tackles in the NFL all year, has been great against the run, has been a really productive pass rusher. And I think he was leading in fan voting. So to me, it's kind of wild that he doesn't make it. And the guys that do, Jalen Carter for me, and Quinnen Williams are the two. Now, Quinnen Williams comes over. In some ways, that's kind of bullshit because Quinnen Williams came from the Jets. So he was on the AFC side, comes to the Cowboys at the trade deadline and ends up stealing a spot in the NFC. Quinnen Williams has been very good. I don't really have that much of an issue with him making it. Jalen Carter has not been that good. I mean, he's been okay, but he's missed time. His numbers are way down across the board, pass rush, run defense. Byron Murphy's been better than him this year. And so that, for me, bothered me the most of the snubs. The other snubs that I would call out, Ernest Jones. Now, the inside linebackers that made it, Jack Campbell, Zach Bond of Philadelphia, they both had good years and are good players. Ernest Jones probably hasn't had enough of the like big moments to get the Pro Bowl, but he has been, you know, at that level, I think, a lot of the season. You could also, you know, question about whether or not Nicky Minori should have been on the Pro Bowl roster. Now, I think he's been in the conversation. I think he's been that good. Now, the cornerbacks that did make it are J.C. Horn and Devin Witherspoon. The safeties that made it are Kevin Byard of the Bears and Antoine Winfield of the Bucks and Buda Baker of the Cardinals. I mean, I question whether or not there, I mean, I think there's probably would have been room for Nicky Minori, but it's also his rookie year. And I think people are still getting to know what he brings. Other than that, I mean, I don't know that there's another player that I'd make a strong case for. Gray Zabel, for a while, I was wondering about whether he might make it as a rookie. Abe Lucas, I kind of thought might have a chance at some point, but had some ups and downs. The tackles that made it in the NFC, Penei Sewell, Tristan Wirfs, and Trent Williams, you know, I don't know that Abe Lucas is going to make it over those guys. But generally speaking, I think they mostly got it right. The Byron Murphy thing is crazy to me. So that's the Pro Bowl. I'm sure you guys all have reactions to it as well. I'm hoping that the All-Pro voting, you know, I don't know if Byron Murphy's going to make it as an All-Pro, but I think he should. I would love to see that. And, you know, it's nice to know that I think either way, Byron Murphy and Nicky Minori are guys that are probably going to be Pro Bowlers for many years in the future. But we will have to wait and see on that. Other stuff outside of Pro Bowl. So the Seahawks signed DeAnthony Bell back to the active roster. That's because two things. One, Derek Hall's suspension was upheld, which I talked about yesterday. I thought was crap. I don't think I think that should have been overturned, but it wasn't. It is worth noting that Ramon Foster, the guy that adjudicated the appeal, is a former offensive lineman. So, you know, I have to wonder if that factored in at all to a defensive player's suspension for stepping on an offensive lineman. But I just think that was crazy. In any event, it opens up a roster spot for this week. DeAnthony Bell gets moved onto the roster, takes that spot. And with Kobe Bryant probably missing this game due to injury, it gives them another safety on the roster. So that's one bit of news there. Other news, the 49ers last night absolutely curb stomped the Indianapolis Colts defense. It was ugly, ugly, ugly. And I've seen all the reactions. It's so funny and predictable. How did they score all those points against the same Colts defense that, you know, even added DeForest Buckner and the Seahawks struggled so much? And I was like, it's a week to week league, folks. Like, you can't transfer from one to the other. And I got news for you. That Colts defense played at a very different level against the Seahawks, motivation wise, energy wise, than they did against the 49ers. They were out of sorts. They were terrible last night. So, yes, the 49ers deserve a ton of credit offensively for being as good as they were, especially they were missing Ricky Pearsall. But they stomped him. Brock Purdy goes for almost 300 yards, 295 yards, five touchdowns, one pick, was only sacked once. And, I mean, look, you knew it was going the 49ers way when they didn't not only got a kickoff fumble recovery, but when Brock Purdy was sacked the one time and stripped sacked at that, that the ball flew into the air and the player who blew the block and gave up the sack, the tight end, caught the fumble, Luke Farrell, and gained 3 yards. Like, come on. So, the 49ers ran at will on the Colts. They passed at will on the Colts. And George Kittle in that game gets 7 catches for 115 yards and a touchdown. He left with an ankle injury. Not sure how serious it is. I would assume it's not that serious, but we'll find out. And, you know, other players that mattered for the 49ers, Christian McCaffrey does his thing again, 117 yards on the ground, 5.6 yards per carry, and 29 yards as a receiver plus 2 touchdowns. So, you know, 49ers offense hasn't punted since November, which is something. I'll open the curtains up a little bit with conversations I have with friends, but you know, I've got a lot of friends that are like, oh man, I'm so worried about this 49ers game. You know, it's going to be for everything. It's going to be, you know, really tough. And I have a couple reactions to that. One, yes, of course it's going to be tough. Like, what are we talking about? But we don't need to be like this. You don't need to be scared as a Seahawks fan of any game. Of course you're going to like, I'm nervous about the game this weekend against Carolina. I mean, I'm nervous every single week because any team can beat you at any time. And you're now in this process of climbing up a rungs of a ladder to where if you fall, it's going to really hurt. Like they're at that point now where this isn't like getting ready for the climb. You are on the ascent. And so you're at pretty high altitude right now and you want to go much higher than you are. Any team, any game, anywhere can be your downfall. That's just the reality. It's also what makes it really amazing when it goes your way. But two things, probably more than two things. One, first things first, like the Panthers game, I'll do I'll do my first look preview. I'll publish my tail of the tape today on that. I've already done a lot of the stats. I'm going to be doing a lot of the other research soon. Tomorrow, we'll have first look where we get into the Panthers matchup even more closely. And I have a couple of Panthers guests that will be joining the show tomorrow. So tons on that. You got to get this game. You have to get this game. And people can say, oh, well, the Panthers, they're pretty good, but they're not that great. We should be able to win. I'm more worried about the 49ers. The 49ers game does not matter if you lose this game. It just doesn't. So this is the game. And if the Seahawks get this game, I don't think they're losing to anybody in week 18. That's my read of this team. Based on the guys in that locker room, they will not blow the game in week 18. I don't care who it's against. The other thing that I would say is the 49ers, they're not playing the Seahawks defense. And I know, given what the Rams just did to the Seahawks defense, people are like, well, maybe that's not as big of a deal as you think. It's a big deal. And the Seahawks defense will be in a special state in that game. And Mike McDonald's done pretty darn well against Brock Purdy and against Kyle Shanahan, better than he's done against Sean McVay. And the 49ers, I mean, Phillip Rivers, like the less covered part of that game last night was that Phillip Rivers was dicing up that 49ers defense. He had 277 yards. He averaged 8 yards per throw. He had two touchdowns. He had a late interception that kind of brought it down, but he was dealing. And so part of the reason that's possible is the 49ers have zero pass rush. They have no pass rush. And I just think the Seahawks are going to be in very good situation. People are like, oh, but they got us in week one. 49ers fans especially like to talk about week one. I got news for you. Like, Nick Bosa is not coming back. Fred Warner's not coming back. That game plan that the Seahawks came out with had so much to do with pass rush that's not going to be there this time around. And it's not just those guys. Mykel Williams is not coming back. Like, there's a lot of guys that were playing for the 49ers in that first week that on defense especially that are not going to be there. And the 49ers struggled. They had guys that they will not have for this game on offense against the Seahawks. So we'll just see. I mean, I think that ultimately you have to go through really good teams to win a Super Bowl. There's not a case where you just get to back into a Super Bowl. That's not how it works. So I'm not sitting here fearful of the 49ers. Honestly, like, there's not any part of me that's worried about the 49ers. It doesn't mean that the Seahawks have no chance of losing. I'm so much more focused on the Seahawks playing at their standard, playing to their standard, than I am about their last two opponents. Now, they're both road games. That hasn't really mattered that much for the Seahawks so far this year. I'm not overconfident. I'm not counting them both as wins. I'm not. But I do expect them to win both games. Now, whether they do that or not, we will find out. We will find out together, and we'll get into that matchup a little bit more. I mean, I honestly, having just done my stat pull for Tail of the Tape this week, I mean, the Panthers, they're it's not a pretty matchup if you're a Panthers fan. Doesn't mean that they have no chance, but there's a reason that the Seahawks are 7-point favorites in Carolina over this team. I thought that was a heavy line. I'm not so sure it's a heavy line based on what I'm seeing so far. But you know what? Like I said, this is the game that gives me more concern, because I just think if you get a Seahawks in a situation where they only need one game to get the number one seed, you're going to get their best. You're going to get their absolute best. And I don't think many teams in the NFL can hang with the Seahawks when they're playing that way. All right. There is a super chat from Bobby. Says, detail oriented, says, Matt, you need to offer to consult the Hawks. Seriously. Well, I'm sure that Matt is in constant contact with the Seahawks. I doubt he is offering consultation because he, as a coach, knows that, you know what, like, the coach has got this figured out. They'll manage it. Also, Apple Podcasts ratings and reviews. We haven't had a new review written since December 4th. I would love a new 5-star review if somebody would be willing to get over there. We've got years of old, bad, real Hawk Talk, you know, reviews to overcome when we were doing the show every once in a while and moving it around and the audio was bad and all sorts of things. So we need as many people. If you want to do something nice for me and for the crew during the holidays, just leave us a 5-star rating over at Apple Podcasts. Leave us a review and I will send it to the crew. Let me just check to see if there are any Venmo super chats before we start wrapping up. And if you want to ever leave a Venmo super chat, whether you're watching on a different platform or you just want to have 100% of your super chat contributions to go to us as opposed to going to 30% going to Google, feel free. All right. We do have, we have a few super chats. All right, let's do it. So first super chat we've got is Daniel Hansen. Says, thank you for doing the best show. My day isn't right without it. Stay rad, Brian. Well, that is incredibly kind. Thanks, man. Alexander McPeak says, hey, Brian, love the show. Any chance that the 49ers sit their starters in week 18 if they are out of the number one seed race? Keep up the great work. Well, let's do a quick look at the playoff situation. That's a good prompt to do that. And bring up the playoff machine, which I've been utilizing probably too much lately. All right. So here we are looking at, I'll share this so you guys can see what I'm doing. I'll put it up on the screen here. All right. So here's the playoff machine. So this is, we'll just set it at win percentage as the default. We're into week 17, and I'll just pick the Giants to win that. All right. So if the Bears beat the 49ers, then let's see. Let's see if we have the 49ers. I don't think there's any way. I don't think there's any way for the 49ers to get the number one seed if they lose to the Bears. I'm looking at different scenarios here just to make sure. But 49ers could get to 12 wins, but not 13. And I'm looking to see, I guess maybe if the Rams, well, no, Seahawks. Seahawks would have, let's see. Yeah, even if the Seahawks lost their last two games and the 49ers had the same record, the Bears would win on, even if the Bears lost in week 18. Yeah, so if the Bears beat the 49ers, even if the Bears lost in week 18 and the 49ers beat the Seahawks, they still wouldn't get the number one seed. What could happen, though, is that they could move up to the division winner, right? So they could technically win the division. That would require the Rams to lose to the Cardinals, which I just don't see happening. I don't think the Rams are going to lose to the Falcons, but let's just play around to see if that's possible. So, yeah. So, I mean, like, they could still win the division and get the second overall seed. So now if the Rams win against the Falcons, which we expect them to do, if the Seahawks win against the Panthers, and if the 49ers lose to the Bears, then you're kind of looking at a situation there where, it would be pretty unlikely. I don't think there's a situation where if the Rams beat the Falcons and the Seahawks beat the Panthers and the 49ers lose to the Bears, which are all possibilities, probably the likelihood in some cases, then maybe they could rest some starters. I don't know. That would be awesome. I wouldn't mind it, but I don't see them doing that. They have suffered so many injuries, maybe, but if you kind of look at this scenario, let's kind of play it out as the most likely outcome. Seahawks beat the Panthers. Let's stick with the Bears beating the 49ers for the time being and the Rams beating the Falcons. All right. If that happens, then assuming that the Rams beat the Cardinals, which almost certainly they will, then the Seahawks are playing for the number one seed themselves versus the number five seed. That's how it would go. And if the Rams lost to the Cardinals, then the Seahawks would still get the number one seed. The Bears beating the Lions, which is very likely, it seems like, but not necessarily. There's a couple scenarios where the Seahawks could lose to the 49ers and still get the number one seed if the Lions beat the Bears and the Cardinals beat the Rams, or the Rams dropped a game to the Falcons, one of the two. So there is like a kind of outlier scenario where the Seahawks could win one game and still get the number one seed. But it's not where my mind is. I am very squarely on just win. That's what matters the most. All right. But good question. And then last super chat here from Sebastian Fairchild says, "Happy Tuesday, Brian. I encourage you to pop over to Unsports ESPN to take a look at their recent power rankings tweets. Thoughts? Seems disrespectful." You know what? I appreciate the super chat, Sebastian. I'm not going to do that. I haven't looked at power rankings all year. I haven't. I looked at DVOA. I look at statistical-based objective power rankings where you take the person out of it. There is some flaw still in that because a person decides what the formula is to decide who's number one, but the formula is applied evenly across every team. So as long as the formula isn't derived from if the team is named this, then I want to add 10 points to their ranking, then at least it's a fair shake. So, you know, people are going to say whatever they want. They're going to talk about Sam, even within the Seahawks fan base, they're going to do that. Let them. That's the deal. And I'll close with this. I am struggling. I admit this. I am struggling with the mindset that I'm hearing from Seahawks fans of this mindset of fear, of like, oh man, this is going to be so hard, or I don't know if we can do it, as opposed to this is a fucking awesome team. Like, this is one of the best Seahawks teams ever. They're 12-3. They have not had any game where a team outclassed them. The closest would have been this last game against the Rams that they won. There's been no team that has separated from the Seahawks. The 49ers got blown out by the Rams. The Rams lost to a Panthers team. The Rams lost to that 49ers team that had like nobody playing for them, not even Brock Purdy, not like they're missing everybody in that game. Seahawks don't have an embarrassing loss this year. And I don't fault people because people like feel whatever they're going to feel. But it's a little frustrating that the mindset of the people supporting this team, or at least some of the people supporting this team, is, oh man, I don't believe. Like, I'm worried about every game. Like, we're gonna lose. Sam Darnold's gonna make a mistake. I'm like, Sam Darnold's been making mistakes almost every game for the last like 10 weeks, and the Seahawks have lost once. I mean, what are we doing here? Those other teams should be fearful when they play the Seahawks. Those other teams should be worried about what happens if the Seahawks correct some of their errors. What happens if the Seahawks start running the ball well? Those are the folks that should be worried and fearful. So I've had to like bow out of some chats because that mindset for me is sending me into dark places. So you know what? If the doubters are going to be inside the house, so be it. For those of you who are in the same mindset I'm in of hell yeah, like I believe in this team, it's going to make it sweeter. You know, it's going to make it sweeter. So enjoy the rest of your Tuesday. I'll be heading to the VMAC. Usually Tuesdays are off, but we do have press conferences and I think maybe locker room access today. I don't know for sure. So keep an eye out on that. I'll be back at 4:30 today for Seahawks Collective. Special time for Seahawks Collective today, 4:30 p.m. Pacific time. Rob Staten, myself, Mike Dugar, and Annabelle Hasselback. I'll see you then. And until then, have a great rest of your day.